Money, 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 money. Welcome to Ask Peggy About Your Finances, because prosperity is so much more than money. Brought to you by writer, speaker, and certified financial planner, Peggy Dowiak.
Thank you to Sports Talk 1400 in Norman for production and studio assistance.
Hello, and welcome to the Ask Peggy About Your Finances show. My name is Peggy Dowiak, and I'm a certified financial planner practitioner and a personal finance author. This is a show to help you understand your money, and we're covering a lot of relationships today. We're going to talk about the chair of the Federal Reserve and the president. We're going to talk about rollovers and fiduciaries, risk tolerance and need, and then finally Roths and traditional IRAs. So let's get started with the bulls and bears market and economic update. This is for the week that ended July 18th, 2025. The Dow was just barely down 0.07%. The S&P 500 was up almost 0.6%, while the NASDAQ was up 1.5%. Gold was down a little less than 0.5%, while oil dropped a little more than 2%, and right now, the current price of a barrel of West Texas Intermediate Crude front month price is $67.31. The dollar dropped by about 0.6%, while the 10-year Treasury yield went up 1.1%. That current yield is 4.423. The aggregate bond went up 0.03%. And Bitcoin was up a little bit more than 0.25%. Finally, the VIX, the volatility index, was pretty flat, only up 0.06%. So a couple of things interesting here. One is that we are continuing to see the 10-year Treasury yield increase. Now, the Federal Reserve met last week. This wasn't the meeting where they would have announced a rate cut, okay? So it's not like they might have announced it, but they actually didn't. No one really expected them to announce either a rate increase or a rate cut, although right now no one is expecting a rate increase, at least not until some other economic conditions change, which right now that hasn't happened yet. So we had the 10-year Treasury going up 1%, which is actually a lot, on no news. And if there was an expectation of news, it would be on an expectation of a cut. What this tells you is it is becoming more and more expensive for the United States government to convince people that they want to buy its debt. So this is kind of a sleeper. It's a result of all of the tariff hoopla. We don't know what's going on. Cans have been kicked down the road again until August. You know, we don't know what's going to happen in August. Perhaps nothing is going to happen. Remember that the Fed had already made the announcement that if it weren't for the tariffs, they would have been continuing to cut rates. They were cutting rates last year with the expectation of cutting rates again this year to help offset some of those rate increases that were a result of the awful inflation we had a few years ago. But with the tariff uncertainty and the potential for inflation with that, the Fed's had to stay pat. Now, that leads us directly into our first story, which is President Trump being very, very angry at Jerome Powell, the Fed chair, for not cutting rates. He really wants the Fed to cut rates. What's ironic about that is the fact that the Fed doesn't need to cut rates right now is a product of our economy doing so well. Okay, usually when you cut rates, you're doing it to goose an economy that has some issues going on. But our economy has been doing very, very well. This tariff hoopla is really the first thing that has caused us some real economic angst in a couple of years. So the president says he wants to fire Jerome Powell, which by law he cannot. He said, unless he is removed for fraud. Now, there is a manufactured scandal, and, you know, I try not to be incredibly political, but this is a manufactured scandal over some updating going on at the Federal Reserve Building, some construction that went over contract, and now there's a very small group of people who are trying to accuse Jerome Powell of somehow being corrupt because it went over contract. There isn't any there to that story. And so I don't think anything can happen with it. I really don't think the president thinks anything can happen with it either, because there's not a huge drumbeat right now. They're trying it in some circles, but it really isn't getting very far. And the short version is the president can appoint anyone that he wants to when Jerome Powell's term is up. As a term of reminder, it was President Trump in his first term who put Jay Powell in the position in the first place. I know there was some news this week that suggested that perhaps Biden had done it. Biden did not do it. President Trump did it during his first term. Then Biden renewed it, which is incredibly normal. Most Fed chairs serve for a considerable length of time just because the job's so complicated. And you want to have someone who's pretty good at sorting through all of that. The first couple of years, any Fed chair, no matter how good they wind up being, they're not great the first couple of years. And generally, they have to a person said something that wasn't quite opaque enough, and people took it as fact, and they ran with it, when really that chair was just kind of spitballing something, which is why when the Federal Reserve speaks, it's very hard to decipher, because the market just hangs on every word of the Fed. Should the president choose to fire Powell, it will be very, very, very bad for the markets. Because the market likes the unbiased Fed. They don't want a political appointee going in who has a political agenda. It could be expected that if, in fact, somehow the president tries to remove Powell, somehow he's successful in it, there is an expectation he would appoint someone who would do what he asked them to do. The markets, for all of their grousing about the Fed, don't want that to happen. So this isn't something we should be wishing for. This isn't something we should be hoping happens, because there will be a bit of a market upturn. In fact, there was rumors going around, and when he kind of was beating the drum a little bit louder, the markets just tanked and will tank if in fact that happens. I don't think it will. I think it's just talk. I really think everyone knows that that's not a good idea. But as always, I will follow the news and try to keep you in the loop.
Thank you to Sports Talk 1400 and Norman for production and studio assistance.
Welcome back to the legislative update of the Ask Peggy About Your Finances show. And today I want to talk about a judge's ruling about a suit brought by the Federation of Americans for Consumer Choice. Now, I want to stop right here and address that name and that acronym, which is FACC. So if you ever see the acronym FACC, it stands for Federation of Americans for Consumer Choice. And that sounds good, right? I mean, consumers should have choices. Unfortunately, this organization is a group of insurance agents who are fighting tooth and nail to get away from having to hold a fiduciary standard with their clients. And the judge's ruling upset them because it didn't completely overturn the fiduciary premises that were set up in 2020, that were then set up again in 2024. This group does not want, and they say in their response, that this attempts to turn ordinary insurance agents into ERISA fiduciaries. And the problem with that is most financial people think their financial, most people think that their financial team are already acting in their, by legal definition, best interest, which is what being a fiduciary actually means. It is a legal it's a legal standard that says that you will put the client's interest ahead of your own interest. And there's a whole lot of people in the financial services world who don't like that. The reason this impacts insurance agents is it impacts the sale of annuities, and they're not wanting annuity sales to have to follow a fiduciary standard. Now, they got a little bit of a win in what the judge said, because the judge said that a single rollover transaction does not start an ongoing advice relationship. Now, I have issues with that two or three different ways. First of all, if somebody rolls your money in and then you never see them again, they're not doing what they need to be doing. They're not following the guidelines of what, you know, just keeping a good relationship with a client, making sure nothing's changing in the client's lives, making sure that nothing is impacting their risk tolerance level. You should actually see, or at least on the phone talk to your financial professional once in a while, even if that financial professional was an insurance agent who sold you an annuity. So the judge said, no, one rollover transaction does not begin a fiduciary relationship, that it has to be an ongoing relationship. However, the judge said that other parts of the fiduciary standard needed to go ahead and be maintained, even though FACC wanted the whole thing thrown over. One of the things that they wanted thrown over was making sure that the client understood the nature of the transaction. And, you know, I seriously can't make this up, because for a group of financial professionals, because these insurance agents are selling investment products, that makes them a financial professional, to not want the client to understand what they're doing just sends up as many red flags as I can possibly imagine. Now, I will go ahead and say there are insurance agents who have products that they believe are the best products to meet your financial needs. And if they go over everything and you understand it and you understand how the product works and you understand any risk associated with the product, and here's a news flash, all products have risk. Okay, when they say, oh, this is a guaranteed rate of return, one of the biggest risks is the financial health of the company that's offering the annuity, because that deal only holds if that company stays in business. Now, many businesses that offer annuities are doing just fine financially, but it still is a risk that the person who is saying, oh, you know, this gets rid of all of your risks. No, it gets rid of maybe your market risk, but it doesn't get rid of financial health risk. And then the other piece, and this is going to make a whole lot of people who sell these products angry, you need to know how much they're getting compensated for providing you with this product. And that doesn't mean that you're necessarily directly paying the bill. That's how annuities work. Most of the time, there is a surrender period where you can only take out so much money every year, which sounds good if your cash flow stays reasonable, right? If you don't have a financial emergency, and that's generally how it's sold. Well, you wouldn't need to take more than this much money anyhow, but you can't take more than that without paying a penalty. That penalty assures that the company gets paid back for the money they gave the agent. So basically what happens is the agent sells you an annuity. The company that creates the annuity pays the agent, often handsomely. And then there's a period of years that you can't access the money outside of the amount that they'll give you for monthly withdrawals. What I want you to ask is, how much money is this person getting for providing you with this product? Especially now, because they're really creating a carve out where they sell it to you and then they move on down the road and they're done. You just need to decide if you want to pay that much money, or if you want that much money paid to someone who has provided a service like this. So FACC is fighting tooth and nail to overturn every single piece of the fiduciary responsibility. Now, this is related to rollovers. And this is when you've had a company retirement plan that does have a fiduciary responsibility out of that plan and into something with just a plain old normal financial planner or financial advisor or insurance agent. Okay, so it leaves the company plan, goes into the private sector, and the argument has been that fiduciary standards should carry to that sum of money. And the financial services industry, in large part, has been fighting tooth and nail to make sure it doesn't. So you need to be aware, you're going to have to be more diligent these days because some of the protections that you had are being rolled back a little bit. And I will also try to keep you in the loop and help you understand what's going on. And together, we'll do everything we can so that you understand the rules about the decisions that you are making.
Thank you to Sports Talk 1400 and Norman for production and studio assistance.
Welcome back to the Plan Your Prosperity segment of the Ask Peggy About Your Finances show. And today, I want to talk about risk tolerance. I was having an online conversation with a friend who's a chartered financial analyst and very, very intelligent, talking about things that make determining someone's risk tolerance really complicated. So I want to talk a little bit about what risk tolerance is, and then I want to talk about some of the things that I think complicate it and potentially some solutions for that. So on its simplest level, risk tolerance is that questionnaire that you fill out before you open an investment account that then helps guide the selection of stocks and bonds and funds that the advisor or the broker thinks will work to help you invest in a way that matches your risk tolerance. So you can be aggressive, you can be conservative, and you can be a number of categories in the middle. You know, often we think about young people being aggressive because they have more time. Sometimes we think of older people as being more conservative because they have less time. But in truth, risk tolerance is much trickier to get accurate than we might think it is. When you use a target date fund or a retirement fund, you buy one fund and it has the year you're going to retire as part of the fund name. So maybe it's the XYZ Company's 2035 fund. And that means that in 2035, your age is about 65. And this particular fund company thinks that that's the right risk tolerance level for you. And then that fund gets more conservative as you get older. That's how a lot of people view risk tolerance. And one of the reasons why those funds have come under some fire is the fact that risk tolerance is in fact so difficult. So let's start at the beginning and not think about those funds for a minute, but just realize if you're in those funds, they are tapping into some of this. Risk tolerance is how much can you stand and still be able to stay invested? So if you start out aggressive and then the market turns sour and you get really, really stressed and you can't take it anymore, so you want out of the market, you are very likely going to wind up getting out of the market well into some sort of a market correction and potentially at exactly the wrong time to be getting out. Because then when the market starts going back up again, you have to figure out when do you get in. And you're already afraid because you just got out. And so it's very difficult to actually sustain that. Where if you had had a moderate allocation of a combination of stocks and more bonds, it might have been easier for you to ride it because when you looked at your investment portfolio, it wouldn't have been so dire when you saw what was happening with your balance. So usually risk tolerance forms will ask you questions about, you know, what is this money for? And are you more comfortable in the market or out of the market? we do our best on these forms. Some are better than others, but the goal is to, see what your stomach for risk is. Sorry about that brief interruption there as I coughed. So that's good, right? But here's the tricky part. Let's assume that the questionnaire was really well designed and pretty much caught your risk tolerance on that day. And so that day you're feeling kind of middle of the road, and so you wind up being moderate, and it really is an honest reflection. Sometimes the questionnaires aren't that well designed and it will skew you one way or the other because you think you should answer it a certain way, and then you'll wind up in the wrong spot as well. But here's where that can go south. Let's assume today you're moderate. Let's assume, however, that on the day you came in, you were really upset. And if you were really upset, it could skew you more conservative, or you might just be in a mood and say, I don't care, let's just go for it, and it should make you more aggressive. Now, neither of those two are actually your mindset, although they were on that day. So here's the real first giant red flag that I want you to think about with risk tolerance. Your mental state matters a lot. So if you have had trauma in your life, that will impact your risk tolerance. And I want you to revisit your risk tolerance every 6 months or so until that trauma resolves. Now, maybe you do it one day and you're moderate, and the next time you're moderately conservative and you talk to your financial planner, it's like, okay, fine, I'll just stay moderate. But if you're seeing big swings, you need to really sit back and look at things and make sure that how you're investing your money is really where you are, and that your mind does not then shift over the long run as your life calms back down. The two biggest triggers of this are death of someone you care about or divorce. Okay, those can both just throw risk tolerance into a tailspin. And the reason it matters is both of those events often end up with you having an account you have to invest. So visit it, revisit it, and revisit it again until you feel like you are in a comfortable place that you're scoring the same way over time. And if your financial professional doesn't want to help you do that, you need to think about that, because risk tolerance changes and it changes with your mood, and I don't want you to get into a mess with it. The second thing that throws people off is they do their risk tolerance. They have two or three different accounts and they invest them all the same way. But if you are 25 or 30 years from retirement, and you have a child who's going to be going to college in 8 years, those two risk tolerance levels are probably not the same thing, because you've got time for your investments, for your retirement to recover, but an 8-year time horizon is much shorter. And sometimes college funding is even shorter than that, while you still have noticeable time before you're going to be retiring. So be aware that your risk tolerance is situational. What is the money for? How does that impact how the money's invested? You could be moderately conservative in a college funding account and aggressive in a retirement account, and they could both be accurate. So you need to be really careful. Again, goes wrong. People have one risk tolerance level and it ends up not being accurate. The third and most important consideration is, yes, your risk tolerance matters. Yes, your ability to stay in the market matters, but you need to check the average. And of course it's average. Of course, we don't know what's going to happen in the future, but that rate of return compared to the rate of return assumptions you're making in your retirement projections. Because if you're conservative in your investments and moderately aggressive in the financial calculator you're using to figure out if you have enough money to retire, you will have a terrible disconnect when you're 65 and suddenly there's not nearly enough money. There's many solutions. You could raise your risk tolerance a little. You could try to work a little bit longer, retire a little later, or put more money back to retirement. But the critical thing is finding the disconnect. Solving it is something that you can impact. But if you don't find the disconnect, you're going to have a lot of trouble with it. And that's going to really not work well for you when you're 65. And I want you to catch it now so you can take the steps you need to take to make sure that it all comes out all right.
Thank you to Sports Talk 1400 in Norman for production and studio assistance.
Welcome back to the Ask Peggy segment of the Ask Peggy About Your Finances show. And I got a great question this week, which is, Peggy, should I fund a traditional IRA or a Roth? And the answer is, it depends. So one of the things that the recent Big Beautiful Bill did was extend the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act lower tax brackets for individuals. Remember, they'd always been permanent for corporations, but they were supposed to sunset the end of this year for individuals. So what that means is the lower tax brackets that you've gotten used to paying are going to remain in effect. There had been some tax planning of taking the higher tax brackets and then going ahead and funding a traditional IRA so you could avoid paying those rates. But now that the brackets are sustained at the lower rates, there might be an advantage to funding the Roth, paying the tax today, and then having tax-free distributions in the future. Remember that the Roth has to be open for 5 years and you have to be 59 and a half before those distributions are completely income tax free. But there's not the giant incentive to go ahead with tax rates going up and deferring that tax and hoping they come down later. Here's what I really believe. I believe at some point tax brackets go up, but I don't know when that's going to be. And I know it's incredibly unpopular, so I wouldn't necessarily count on it happening anytime soon. The next thing you'll need to do, and these phase outs change all the time, and this is radio, so you need to get with your HR department and your own financial team to see how this works for you. If you have a retirement plan at work, you may not be able to deduct IRA contributions if you earn too much money. Now, if you have a retirement plan, but your spouse does not, the spouse has a higher income threshold inside of which they can deduct IRA contributions. That number happens to be the same number for being able to fund a Roth. So that if you have a retirement plan, you earn less money to take the deduction, but if your spouse doesn't have a retirement plan, they will be able to fund it. Even if they don't work, they can fund it off of your earned income, and they have a higher income threshold. So you want to pay attention to how much money you make. If you earn quite a bit of money, you may not be able to fund the Roth at all because there's just a flat out income phase out on Roths. And if you earn more than that, you can fund it. And if you earn less, if you earn more than that, you cannot fund it. And if you earn less than that, you can. So you're going to want to talk to your team, but the initial tax incentives have gone away.
Thank you to Sports Talk 1400 in Norman for production and studio assistance.
You may submit personal finance questions to the Ask Peggy Facebook page and learn more at peggydoviak.com. And remember, prosperity is so much more than money.